right, today is Friday, August 19th. This is Desiree Hargis, graduate student at the University of Texas at Austin, H.J. Luther Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports, Institute for Olympic Studies. As part of the 1968 U.S. Olympic Team Oral History Project, I'm interviewing Johnny Baldwin over in person today at the Stark Center about his experiences in the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. So, Mr. Baldwin, first of all, let's start off with your birth name and when and where you were born.
I was born in Detroit, Michigan, and for some reason they named me Johnny Lee Baldwin. but they spelled my name J-O-H-N-N-I-E. Now, that was supposed to have been with the girls, with the I-E. But I had a little story on that, and someday I'll tell you behind closed doors.
Okay. All right. And when were you born?
1949.
Okay. And your birthday is coming up pretty soon, isn't it?
Nah, it passed March the 26th.
Oh, okay. So March 26th.
Yeah, my wife keeps saying I'm 62 years old.
And you just don't believe it?
Nah.
No, well, you don't look 62. And so did you grow up in Detroit?
Yeah, I was raised in Detroit up until I was about 19, 20 years old. Then I left and went to Washington, D.C. to turn professional. And that's when I got with Pappy Galt, and I turned professional. I came to Texas, matter of fact, to turn professional. And I was 20 years old. And I couldn't even sign my contract. So it was like a few months, and I had to wait until March after my birthday in order to sign my contract to turn professional. My mother wouldn't sign it.
Oh, wow.
She didn't want me fighting anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So going back, when did you first get involved with boxing?
It was probably in 1964. I remember once... We used to be playing basketball at this recreation center in Detroit, Martin's Recreation Center. It was a man named Mr. Paul that was the boxing coach. And my brother and I used to play basketball. We always was fighting. So one day he called me Hooker. He said, "Hey, Hooker." He said, "Come here." He said, "You want to fight in my tournament?" I told him, "Yeah." So he put me in the tournament. I won. And I went back to playing basketball. So, and then he kept saying, "Man, that boy beat everybody. I knocked most of them out." And then so the next year he asked me, did I want to fight in the Golden Clubs? And I told him, yeah. He said the junior is the novice division. I told him, yeah. So I fought in that, won it. Went back playing back. I was never serious about boxing. Now, boxing was just, I guess I knew how to fight. It was a natural thing. So the next year, I fought junior novice, then I fought novice. Then the last time, he said, "You know, this is 1968 coming up." And he said, "This is, if you win this, you might can go to the Olympics." I said, "Yeah," which I didn't have any problem with it. I just didn't know anything about the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So I trained and I went on. I won. Matter of fact, I went to the National Golden Gloves. And I lost to this guy named William Beeler. All right. So later on, we went to the National AAU. I lost to William Beeler again in the final. So the thing was, he could not represent the National Golden Gloves and the National AAU in the Olympic trials. So he had to pick one, so and they picked me to take one. And so in the Olympic trial, he was my first opponent. And that was the first time I was very glad to say I whooped him like a runaway slave. So I beat him and... Now, I made the finals to go to the Olympic Games, and from there, that's what I did.
Okay. So, you played basketball and then you got into to boxing. Were there any other sports that you were involved with before you became very serious about boxing?
No more than what normal kids would do, playing a little basketball or baseball or something. Nothing serious. Mm-hmm. It's just like basketball. It wasn't serious, just playing. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
And did you have any like mentors or major influences that really got you into the elite boxing arena?
Yeah, I had a brother. He used to always tell me, but he wanted me to fight. But I never thought about it. Then my other brother, which he was, them two would grew up together, and he told me that my oldest brother was one real good fighter. And so when I started boxing, I went to this recreation center one time where we were training Brewster. Matter of fact, Brewster Recreation Center is where Joe Louis first went, where he started off at. And I was training. And one day, I don't know how I mentioned my brother's name. And one of the trainers must have knew him. He said, hey, he called another trainer. He said, man, guess who his brother is? And he said, who? He told him Samson Baldwin. Mm. And they all looked. He said, man, no wonder he can fight. They said, I can fight. So boxing was, I guess fighting was a natural thing. You know, you can find some people have natural ability and some people that don't. Some people have to be trained and taught to do everything. And some people can just fight. And that's it. So I guess I was just one of the ones who knew how to fight.
Yeah. So Samson was how much older than you?
Oh, shoot. My brother was old enough to be probably a father to me, you know. But, and after they found that out, that's when I began to hear a lot of stories about my brother.
Oh, really?
Oh, man. He was one good fighter, but he just stayed in trouble.
Oh.
He stayed in trouble, so he never did get a chance to move along. I was probably the only one that moved the furthest in boxing out of all the boys in my family.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had three brothers and two sisters.
Mm. And all three of the brothers boxed?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So a boxing family. And what did you said earlier that your mom didn't like it.
Oh, no. I know once my mother came to a fight that I had. This is so strange. She, we was fighting, and me and the guys for the guy hit me. Next thing I looked up, they were pulling my mother off the canvas. She was trying to get in the ring, and she was hitting at the guy with her purse. And, you know, it was so, they, more or less, my family abandoned her. My sister and them would bring her to the fights anymore. She was real touchy about her children.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was in there trying to hit the boy with the purse and police running around trying to get her, you know. And so it was real funny, you know. We couldn't do nothing but laugh.
Yeah.
So, and right, you know, even when we grew up, she did not allow people to take advantage of us.
Mm.
You know, because my brother and I, this one big kid, big, we must have whooped him one time. I remember the boy, I bit him in the chest.
Oh, my goodness.
And my mother run over there, and I was hanging on to him, and she was hitting him. She said, turn him loose. Kept hitting that boy. Turn him loose. He said, lady, I ain't got him. He got me. So my mother looked at him, just bite him in the chest, and finally this kid went home. I mean, we were like in elementary school.
Mm.
This guy went home, he was a big guy. He went home and got his dad, and his dad came back to our house, and my mother was trying to tell him. He was picking on us. She said, well, where they at? So she called us out, and the man looked at her. Them little boys? She said, yeah. He slapped his son and told him to get out of there.
Mm.
Because them two little boys, the two little boys made a man out of anybody. So
yeah.
Then my brother and I was just as rough. We were rough. And And I never forget that man hit that boy and told him, "You let these little boys beat you up." And he slapped him, slapped his son.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so. But, you know, we didn't have a history of fighting. We just had a history of being tough.
Yeah.
And that was it, because we never did have too many fights or anything like that. I guess when you can have an ability of doing something, certain people just don't pick on you.
Right.
So, and we didn't pick on people. So I know we used to get a lot of kids come to us and tell so-and-so is going to buy them, and they'll walk with us, and then they wouldn't buy them or something like that, you know.
Just the intimidation factor enough is to keep you out of fights.
Yeah, we were more like a protector of a lot of friends of ours, so.
They must have really liked that. So, leading up to the games, where were you living and what were you doing just prior to the games?
Well, during the game, I got out of school in 68. And right after that, I went to the Olympics. And from there, when I went to the Olympics after I got out, that's when I got the invitation of going up to Piney Point, Maryland, up there to the Harry London Bird School of Seamanship, and that's where I continued to box amateur and fought in their tournaments, and then later on, in 69 or 70, I came to Texas.
Okay, so you had just finished school, and yeah. Where were you going to school?
In Detroit, Southeastern High School.
Okay, yeah. And so tell me a little bit about how you paid for your training in that year before the Olympic Games.
You know, it's strange. We used to do a little something. We might work at the car wash or something like that to pay our little fees that we had to pay at the recreation center in order to do these things or buy the material. My mother didn't have a lot of money, and I know when we got older, I noticed things like that, and we would work at a car wash or something like that, and I remember I would come home, I always bring my mother and give her money. Mm-hmm. She'd say, "No, baby, I don't want your money, you take your money." I said, "No, mama, here, we'll give, if I had $20, I'd give her $5 or $10 of it," and I learned, that's the way I just grew up, and she would always say, "Y'all always give me something." Even till I got grown and I moved to Texas, I did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I went home, I brought my mother something. And she always smiled. She said, "No matter," she said, "y'all always bring me something, don't you?" I said, "Yeah, Mom." Because I loved it. I remember when I came to Texas, I had a phone bill higher than my car note. I used to pay $400 to $500. Phone bill. That was before they had this calling where you can call free now. Jesus, but it didn't bother me. I paid it.
And you were calling your mom?
I called my mom every day. Every day. She would get on me about talking to her so much, and it's just something about hearing her voice.
Yeah.
Just something about hearing her voice, and I just loved it to death.
And what was your mother's name?
Lucora. Lucora.
Okay, thank you. That's a pretty name.
Yeah, and I don't know. When she died, you know, it's strange. I wasn't hurt because I knew I had did what I had to do for her while she was living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had no regrets. I never did say, "Boy, I should have did this. Oh, I should have came home." I used to come home and see my mother all the time. All the time. She would call me. She said, "When you coming home?" I was there last month or maybe last week. I had a friend, had a hookup on some airline tickets. I would just fly home to see my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had a family, I had a wife and kids. We never, ever took a vacation nowhere but home to see my mother.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go to Disneyland. We didn't go to these places like that. Every opportunity I got, I went home and see my mother.
Sounds like you were a wonderful son.
I loved her. Yeah. I love my mom, yeah.
So, you paid for your training for boxing and things just through different jobs that you had in high school?
You know, little stuff that we had to do, like hand wraps, shoes, boxing shoes, trunks, and, you know, things like that, rope and all this stuff. We found a way of getting it. And, you know, I'd go out there, like I said, work at a car wash, or do cut some. In the wintertime, we'd cut shovel snow.
Mm.
We used to, we would shovel that snow and getting people give us whatever was $2 or whatever. We'd shovel half of the block. But that's what we did.
Well, that's a good way to get strong, too.
Yeah, yeah. We just loved it when it snowed, because we know that was money time.
So, yeah, and Detroit's a good place to make money doing
that. Yes, it definitely was, yeah.
Wonderful. So tell me a little bit about your friends. Were they also boxers?
Well, when I first started off, you ain't gonna believe this, I was in a gang, a little gang. It was, we call ourselves, what was it called? The Mac Crusaders. And it was just wasn't a type of rowdy game. We did little devilish things, and where we would maybe steal something and go sell it, and guys would want a drink or something like that, but we never harmed people.
Mm-hmm.
We never did it. We always had the utmost respect for the elders, though. But, you know, and then now maybe another gang, we were want to fight with them. And back then, we didn't fight with nothing but our hands. But today, it's a lot different. They shooting each other. So we might have got into a fist fight with one or two guys. But other than that, that's as far as our gang went, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Until one day, one of the guys did shoot somebody. Then after that, we all dispersed, and we knew that wasn't for us. Of course, I had always said what I wanted to do. And that was it. So after that happened, we just dispersed and wasn't the type of gang that we wanted to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting and fighting, cutting folks like that. No, we didn't do that. It was just like you might chunk a rock at them or something like that, or hit them upside the head with something and run off. But nothing like the gangs that they affiliate today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Things have changed.
Oh, yeah.
So, did your training take a lot of time? Did it take time away from relationships or dating or?
It did. I remember I had a girlfriend, and she told me I liked that boxing better than I did her. I just told her, well, I just couldn't, you know, be with her, and then didn't fight, you know, and fight or something like that. So, yeah, it took up a lot of time. A lot of time. And, you know, and I say this today, when I was fighting, and when I got turned professional, you have to have an understanding person in order to deal with someone that's faithful in boxing, do what they not do the things they're not supposed to do. You got to be really good, strong person to understand these things. It's just like anything else. You go to school to do what you want to do, and if you have a friend, that person's supposed to understand what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and not interfere. So, yes, I did have problems with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, tell me a little bit about the Olympic trials themselves and the process there, and then. I guess, were there any problems or challenges? You already mentioned a little bit about it, but...
Yeah, the Olympic trials, you know, we first started off with the National Golden Gloves. And the National Golden Glove, I believe, was in Salt Lake City at that time. And I fought... I remember losing to William Beeler. And then, so... After that, went to the National AAU, which was in Maumee, Ohio. And I lost to him there. So after that, he won the National, go to love the National AAU. So he couldn't represent both of them. So I had a chance to represent the National AAU in the Olympic Trials. And the Olympic Trials was in Maumee, Ohio. They brought it back there. And William Beeler was my first opponent. And just like I said, I whooped him like a runaway slave. I whooped him. And I was real happy after that. And then as the competition went on, I beat the other opponents. And Richard Royal was the alternate opponent for me there. He was only problem I had in the Olympics is that they wanted me to let him take my place. And I kept saying, because James Ross was the one that I fought, but we didn't realize I broke his nose.
Oh.
And we didn't find out until we got to the training camp, which was in it was New Mexico, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and that's when we found out his nose was broke.
Mm.
So they wanted Richard Royal to take my place. Now Richard Royal was a very good welterweight, and I kept telling them at first. I said, well, why should he go? If I won it and beat them, why should they belt? Because he had more experience than I did. So they got mad, and I remember them telling me, well, then it wasn't going to be responsible if anything happened to me. Well, it made me kind of scared, and I remember calling home, and I was crying, and I told my mother about it. And she said that wasn't right, you know. And so she told me some encouraging things. And she said, don't worry about it. You go ahead on. You won, and you go ahead on. And they kind of pushed me to the point to where I made me feel like, you know, things was going to happen. And if it happened, they wasn't going to help me with it or do anything for me. And it kind of left me in a blind corner. And I was kind of scared, you know. So, but I still don't understand certain things. You know, I don't care how much experience you have. If you get whooped, you just whooped.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who whooped is apparently better than you. But they looked at the experience. He had been to the Pan American Games and this and that. So that's how they felt, that they wanted him to go because he was more or less, he'd been around. He was in the Marines at the time. So I was young and I just didn't know, just like George and I. George and I was probably the youngest. We were the youngest on the team.
And how old were you?
I was 18 and George was 18. George turned 19 before I did, about a month or so before I did. And that's how I remember it.
It's very young.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you did your training in Albuquerque after you made the team.
Yeah, that was for high altitude.
And how did the altitude there affect your boxing while you were there in Albuquerque?
It made you tired quicker.
Mm-hmm.
I remember they started us to running up like little mountains and something, hills to try to build it up. It worked. A lot of it worked. And I remember we left there and went to Denver.
Mm.
And I think that was more or less a little high altitude. But Denver was a place where we got uniform for our clothes at the Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
But all these places. And then when we got to Mexico City, they said it was high altitude. You couldn't tell probably until you started doing something athletic. And that's when it will phase you that, you know, the altitude was the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those were the first games held at that kind of altitude.
Yeah.
So did you have any specific, or if you can tell me a little bit more about your specific training regimen and preparation leading up to Mexico?
Yeah. I mean, I have a cousin We call him Pee-wee. He grew up with him and my brother grew up together. His name was real name was Willie Lyman, but I never knew nothing but Pee-wee. But he used to take me out to what we call, it was an island in Detroit called Belle Isle. And he used to take me faithfully and make sure I ran around that island. And the island was like 3.5 miles around. And I used to run. He used to take me all the time. He spent a lot of time taking me places to make sure I got there, even to the gym where I had to train. Sometimes it was snow real bad, and Pee-wee would take me there. And right today, we still don't even talk about it, but I just know what he did for me.
Mm-hmm. See?
And he helped me a lot. He always made sure I got in front of his car and ran. And I don't know if he did it because he felt if I fell down, he would run over me, but I think he was just doing it to protect me, make sure nobody else would hit you. Because, see, when it's snow like that, a lot of times you can't run on an embankment because it'd be too much snow, so you kind of have to run in the street.
Yeah. And so you talked about running up and down hills and mountains in Albuquerque. Was there anything else that you did to prepare in Albuquerque or in Denver?
Well, Denver, really, we didn't. But Albuquerque was the one. We took a lot of hikes. I met some people, and I went even climb mountains. And I didn't know, I mean, real steep mountain. When you got up there, you look, man, I couldn't believe I got up there, but I went up on mountain climbing, and I did a lot of walking, and out this, we was staying at a college, and out there, you go out the back of the dorm, and there was a mountain going steep up, and we used to try to have to walk up there all the time. We walk up there before you eat, walk up there after you eat, and that's all they told us. And we did just what we had to do.
So in Denver, is there anything that sticks out in your mind about the experience in Denver, getting your uniform and your equipment? Anything interesting about that?
I met all the Olympic girls there. Yes, and it was the first time I had ever seen them and met them before we got to the games. Yeah, sure did. We was all on the elevator, escalators, and everything else. But then I was younger, so. But I think those girls were a little bit more advanced than I was. I didn't have a chance. I had guys on the team that was in the service, so they knew better than I did.
So, did you go to Mexico, fly to Mexico from Denver or from Colorado?
We flew there from Denver, Colorado. We flew straight into Mexico. And I remember once we went got on into the Olympic Village, they had National Army guys protecting. At that time, they had a little demonstration going on over there. I don't know if they hired them, but they had these army guys watching the Olympic Village and stuff.
And did you ever hear anything about the Olympic Project for Human Rights or any possible boycotts or protests by some of the Olympic athletes? Did you ever get a letter about supporting civil rights protests during the Olympic Games?
Yeah. We was asked to participate.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, like I said, I was young, and we was asked to, they wanted to demonstrate the, I didn't know what it was all about, and I told them, if I got my medal, I didn't care what it was, I was going to wear it proudly and parade with it, and the other guys mentioned that names I may not want to mention. They did what they had to do. And then when they did the salute, that was the first time they had the Black Power salute. And they brought that out. And it's been there ever since. And it's here today, still doing it. So, yeah, we was approached on that. George was approached on it. And but we just didn't have an initiative to go that route. I think we had did enough to get there, didn't have to do what we do something like that to get kicked out of there.
Okay.
Because some of them did get kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely didn't want that to happen. We had came too far.
So who approached you and how did they approach you?
Well, not knowing for sure exactly who, but I know some of them were talking to us about some of the black athletes. Most of the track and field guys
mm-hmm.
were saying something about they were going to boycott the Olympics. And, you know, and right today I still don't know why. I still don't know why. Boycott, man, why are you going to do it not just here, you know? So I didn't feel like that was fair. So I definitely wasn't going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what it was all about and couldn't have supported if it was something I didn't know about.
Mm-hmm. How did they respond to your not wanting to participate?
Well, they had no other choice because, you know, even though we were on different sides of the field as far as athletes, they couldn't make us.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely couldn't make us. Now, if you're going to say, we're going to fight this out, I think the boxers would have won. So it was just a mutual thing that they wanted us to do something that they believed in. And there was something that I didn't know about and something I didn't believe in. So I felt like anything I don't believe in and know about, I won't participate in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. So before you got to Mexico or, right after you got there, do you remember hearing anything about the Tlatelolco massacre, the protests and the killings that happened about 10 days before the Olympics?
No, I didn't. But I heard of something about the protests. And this is why they had those army guards around the Olympic Village. And it didn't bother me because I still went out. I went through the city just like it was nothing. I ran into one Mexican guy who could barely speak English. He must have took me somewhere everywhere.
Really?
We went somewhere everywhere. And I was even had little Mexican sodas and I remember I had the diarrhea.
Oh, no.
Yes, indeed. Oh, man. They got on me about drinking that stuff over there.
So, yeah.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, I didn't realize it. They said, what you been doing? What you been eating and drinking? And I told them. So I was up half of the night taking medicine.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So had you ever been to Mexico or Latin America before?
No.
What was your first impression?
Well, it was strange to me because, I've been to other countries, but Mexico was a little bit different. And you've seen a lot of things. I even went where the property was real bad, you know, and where these people were living like in 10 houses or something like that. And you could see them and they were hungry and stuff like that. And it made me change my mind a little bit about that country. You know, I know at that particular time it wasn't a leading country as far as health-wise, I remember we were going somewhere. We was in a vehicle, and it was a dog on the back of a truck that was dead and was swole. Somebody said, well, that's going to be on somebody's table. And
oh, my goodness.
They used to make jokes like that, you know. So.
Yeah. You said you ventured out into the city and
yep.
you did a little bit of sightseeing and you met a man that kind of showed you around.
Yeah.
So was he like acting as a guide or a translator for you?
Well, he was more or less acting like he wanted my friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a girl that he introduced me to, a Mexican girl, and she was real one. I just never could understand what she was saying. So I didn't know what she wanted.
Mm.
And I really liked her. She was I wanted to go back there just to find them one day. and I was never able to go back again.
Do you remember his name?
No, I don't.
Oh.
No, I don't.
So that leads to my next question. I was just going to ask, like, how did the local people receive you, and how did they treat you, and what seemed to be their response or feelings about you?
Well, they knew I was probably from the Olympic Games, but a lot of them would come. They would, matter of fact, I stopped and took pictures with some little kids, like policemen or something. As a matter of fact, one day I might find those pictures. I made some, and I took pictures with them. And everywhere I went, people was happy to see me and shake my hand, wanted my autograph, and this and that. And I never had anyone say anything or do anything derogatory toward me. So
sound like they were really friendly.
Yeah, they were real friendly over there. And I've always thought Mexican people were good people anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like they were very warm and welcoming. So did anyone else go with you on your sightseeing trips out into the city? No, you just went by yourself?
By myself, and right today, I think about that. That was real dangerous. You know, when I say dangerous, when you look at what you call them, the contrails over there and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing, I had no sense of drugs. I knew anything about drugs at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Not to know or worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But now, right now, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't go over there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just strange. I sit here and think about it. I was places that I had never been before. Nobody knew where I was. Nobody. Not even the coach. They used to always get on, "Where you been? Where you been?" You know, and stuff like that. So that's the part I'm talking about that was probably a little bit scary. You know, you've been places, you know, things happen to a lot of American people because a lot of people in foreign countries are jealous of Americans. They'll say nasty things about me. I know we was over in Germany or Russia, and they were talking about the American people. Matter of fact, in the Olympics, one of the Russians was real cocky and gonna bump his way past us, and I think we must have shoved him and pushed him out the way and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a lot of countries don't like the United States, and because we're a good country. We're a good country. We are a rich country almost, and a lot of countries wasn't doing like Americans were, and they didn't seem. Some of them didn't seem to like us, so we got that part and that feeling from that.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the Olympic Village, and what was your first impression of?
Now, the Olympic Village, they had it to the max for us. It was really beautiful. They even had the place and time where we can eat our food, not the food that was prepared for people from another country, but the food that we would normally eat. Like that. So this is how they wanted me to do, the coaches and things, to stay on the village and eat that food. And me, I wandered off and I got hungry. I wanted soda and some chips. It tasted funny, but I just ate it and drank it anyway.
Oh, no.
So, yes, indeed.
So you got sick from that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did anyone else you know get sick?
Yeah, I don't know for sure who it was, but I know somebody else was taking medicine too. So I wasn't the only one.
So. So describe where you were staying and who you were staying with in the Olympic Village.
Well, in the Olympic Village, we had our own dorm where all the Americans stayed. And the other countries had theirs where they would stay. Now, I only remember, like, on one floor, all the fighters stayed.
Do you remember which floor it was?
I don't know if it was about the seventh floor or something like that. And we had rooms like you would in a hotel on that particular floor, or apartment on that particular floor. And all of it was on that floor. We wasn't like a one on the 10th, one on the 3. No, we all were together.
Mm-hmm. So all the boxers were in a suite or...
Yeah, almost just like here. You got a room here, room there. It was like that. We were all together. We didn't sleep different places or one, like I said, one on another floor. And we all slept on the same floor in the same area. And it was big enough to have where they had most of us, all of us in there. Mm-hmm. In that one particular big room, because it was a big room. I don't know but I asked them later on about that building. They said they eventually turned them into apartments or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about the accommodations there, and were there any problems?
Well, no problems, because we didn't face anything, because a lot of times accommodations was good, but the problems, we didn't have any. We didn't have any problems.
Well, that's good. Was there anybody on the team that you were particularly close with or good friends with?
Let me see. I must have kept my distance, because we were all edgy. We was all fussing. We was all wanting to fight each other because it was tense. And I remember me and George was... Fight George told me he's gonna get me after the game. I said, "No, you get me now." So after the game, I guess we all that tense left, and we all was happy. Nobody did anything.
Yeah.
It was just something it's just like a bunch of people. You know, if you and five other girls stand and one, y'all, it's something gonna give. Somebody gonna get mad at each other about something. So we just same way. But we didn't mean anything. It was never nobody tried to hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
We might have did a bunch of hollering and fighting, or not fighting, cursing, or you know, something like that, but nobody never tried to hurt each other.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I definitely know what you're talking about. If I had to stay in a suite with five other girls, there'd be...
You know, I watched the Bad Girls Club. I didn't know it's pretty day or they just be fussing and fighting. I said, Jesus, what they fighting about? You know, I watch it sometimes just to see what they're doing. But then I found out, no matter who you are, what you are, you're going to eventually have it with somebody. Just like they say, two women can't stay together, two men can't live together. Well, yeah, you can if you just have the right person.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the event venues and the athletic facilities? The event venues, like where they were held and the facilities where...
Oh, okay. They were nice. Matter of fact, we had an opportunity to go to any of them that we wanted to go to. And I used to go to the weightlifters and some of the wrestlers. I don't know if they wrestled, but they had weightlifters and some wrestlers. But I used to watch, and sometimes we go on the track field, see the guys running and stuff like that. Now, the boxing, we used to try to keep that a little secret, you know, because most of the countries came over to see our heavyweight. And I remember they were watching George, and George hit this guy. See, George didn't have anybody to really spar with. So they had another country, had some guy, and George knocked the guy's teeth out of his mouth. And we were down there, and I remember, said, "Look." And Pappy tried to make me shut up. Right after that, that's when you found a lot of those heavyweights withdrew out of the heavyweight division with George and him. A lot of them withdrew. Sure did.
They just withdrew?
Yeah, they wouldn't fight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, did you participate in the opening ceremony?
Opening and closing.
Yeah?
Yeah, Cindy. It was a lot of fun. It was a matter of fact, on the book cover, when I first got the book, they said, can you spot? I said, there I am right there. One little black spot on there, you know. And so you had to get a magnifying glass, and Tom Bounce here. He said, yeah, that is you. And yeah, so I knew where I was.
Yeah.
I knew me. So nobody know me better than me.
Right, right. Definitely. Are there any memories or experiences that stand out from the opening or closing ceremonies?
Yeah. I remember when they let them pigeons out. And one of them boo-boo on one of old Al Jones' lip.
Oh, no.
Yes, he was mad. And we was ducking, trying to keep the birds from messing on us.
Yeah.
But it was really nice. It was really nice. I remember they were marching out. We were walking down the field in other countries. You could see them walking, and we all got in one spot. And that's when we did. And people don't realize that's one great moment. That was one great moment, you know. And then when it ended, it was a great ending, too. Yes, I remember that.
So if you can tell me a little bit about your actual event and where it was held and how your particular competition went leading up to the medal podium.
Well, I can't remember exactly where it was. I always was transported. Mm-hmm. I remember fighting, and then the person that I fought, the guy was, I think he was from Cuba, and I fought him, and when the decision came, I remember him bending over, looking at me, and hunching his shoulder, doing that. He was surprised, too, that they had given it to him. Hmm. So, and that left me with the gold, bronze medal. And but, you know, it was already said that most of the sports, if anything had to do with man being able to challenge and take something away, the Americans would lose, except for things like running.
Hmm.
You can't put nobody ahead of nobody in running. But you can take points, or you can give points to somebody in boxing that don't deserve it.
Hmm.
See? And that was the biggest thing, because we had one big controversy back during that. Al Robinson, what did they do? They disqualified him or something. And you remember when George first jumped in the ring with that little American flag in his hand?
Mm-hmm.
That was to calm the audience down. Because they had a big problem with Al Robinson from the United States. He had they had gave his medal to the other country. They booed that thing and throwing stuff in the ring. So what happened, George got in the ring and had a towel over there and had that little flag, and all they seen was USA, and they went to yay and started clapping, and George took the rest and walked around with it. And that was one great shot that they took of him with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, he had to go in the ring like that because the people were upset on the decision that was given or that was taken from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they can take things from you, but they cannot take anything from you that you run. So a lot of us say the best thing to do if you want to win a fight, knock them out.
Mm. Well,
knock them out. If it's going to come to a decision, it's going to be anything close, they're going to give it to them.
So, are you saying that the judges were biased against the United
States? Absolutely. A lot of people, you know, this country is hated. It's hated not so much because of things like, it's hated because of what we are. It's a good country. We're ahead of a lot of things. A lot of people, I've heard a buddy of mine's come back and was talking about how over in Iraq, not so much a soldier, how those kids are turned against a lot of soldiers. How this one boy's father, it was on the news, he turned his dad in. His dad was shooting soldiers. They got him, and he did not like it because the Americans was there helping them in their country. And he turned his father into the army, and because he was sniping maybe soldiers and stuff. So, yeah, this country can be hated by a lot of people because the goodness that this country does for people. We stand by, we'll fight for them. Most of these fights seem like it's mostly it's not for just our fight. It's we fighting for somebody to help them. So
at the 1968 games, did you feel, or did the boxing team feel that there was some nationalism or bias against the United States?
Yeah, definitely.
And what was the speculation about why that might have been back then?
Well, back then, it probably was because of more or less things that was happening in the United States. The boycott was going on and all that stuff that had something to do with it. And people being prejudiced towards the ones that was doing it and the ones that was doing it, they took it from the not just us, the black people, but they took it from the whole team. They figured if they're going to suffer, we'll let them all suffer. They didn't do Africa like that. They didn't do Nigeria, all them places like that. They did the United States. I feel like they hindered us, and anything that they can take from us, they'll take and give to someone else. So
how many fights did you have?
I think it was three of them. Before I had went to the bronze medal.
And how did you feel up on the medal podium when you received your medal?
I was happy that I was up there, but I knew where I should have been, and I wasn't. Because the next year, I fought both of those guys, the runner-up and the Olympic medal winner. And I beat them in Las Vegas. Yes, indeed. A year later, I beat them in Las Vegas.
So Rolando Garvey was the Cuban, I believe. And then, do you remember who the gold medal winner was?
I can't think of his name, but he was the Russian.
Oh, he was Russian.
Yeah.
So, what did you do immediately after your event, when your event was done, but you were still there in Mexico City?
Well, I went to other events after mine. I remember we, when I got through fighting, we had maybe another American come, and we stayed there and support our team. Then we would go, and when we wasn't fighting, we was all supposed to stick close together. I'm always going to some event, watching the United States do something.
Well, you're lucky you got to go to so many events. A lot of the people that I've talked to, the athletes I've talked to, didn't get to go.
That's why I always call myself, I was a wanderer. I wandered everywhere, and I thank God nothing has ever happened to me.
Yeah, you're very lucky.
I used to go to the weightlifters, and I used to laugh. Boy, I used to laugh, because they lift them weights up, and they be straining. You hear all kind of noise.
Oh.
I be laughing back there. So then I remember going to the fencing, and I didn't like that, but that's what Tom was doing. Then I would sneak over, find something to go to another event, track and field. I went to a lot of them.
Did you have to sneak into the events?
No, just walk in.
Oh, that's good.
Just walk in. It's just a lot of them didn't go because we couldn't go. They didn't let us go. They wanted us to stick together. Then again, they didn't want you out there doing something and you got a fight coming up and you're doing something silly out there or something could happen to you, see?
Right. So you talked a little bit about the women on the Olympic team. Did you have any other interactions during the games with some of the women athletes?
No, I didn't. I met one of them after the games in D.C. Well, we were supposed to went to the inauguration of Nixon.
Mm.
And when I came there, one of the girls that was going, and we decided not to go.
Yeah.
We went to some places there in D.C. and had some fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I figured the inauguration ball was going to be too boring for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds fun.
It wasn't going to play our kind of music.
Yeah. So did you guys go dancing and stuff
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, sure did. Sure did.
And what event was she in?
She was in track and field.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. The gender verification testing was introduced in 1968. Do you remember any of the women talking about the gender testing? And
Yeah. Who was that? Was that the Russian girl, the German, or somebody was tested or something like a man or something, they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, yeah, they. I remember them talking about it. Matter of fact, one of the countries, we couldn't tell whether it was a man or woman.
Oh, really?
Both had been a woman.
And was this at the games there
yeah.
in 68?
They was in the games. And you try to figure out, what is that? Nobody knows.
Did any of the U.S. women talk about having to have a cheek swab to test so that they had to prove that they were women?
No.
No?
They might have. It might have kept to themselves, but I didn't recall it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't recall it.
So, going back a little bit to the Soviet athletes, you've described some interactions with the Soviet athletes, but can you talk a little bit more about the interactions that you had with the Soviets and how those interactions went?
Well, I didn't have any. I remember getting on the bus and some was on there, and I didn't do anything silly, nothing towards them, or say anything bad about them. But we felt a lot of vibes from them. And of course, you know, they're going to always think what they can do that other people can do, what's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was near the height of the Cold War. You know, the political tensions between the Soviets and the U.S. Did you pick up on that? Is that the vibe you were getting, or?
That was the vibe I was getting.
Okay.
Yeah. And also picked up on it because you can almost tell the way one of them would say something in their language and throw their hand at you. You know, what are you saying? You know, and.
Mm.
See, today they can't do that. If you get killed, if they don't know what you're saying.
Mm.
So if they know what you're saying, they're going to kill you in a way, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Were any of them friendly?
I'm going to be honest with you. Not that I know of.
Mm.
I never had an open conversation where one was just really laughing and grinning and talking. No, I couldn't say that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about the East German athletes?
The Eastern?
East German athletes. Do you remember having any interactions with?
Well, Germans, they are a little bit better because they, I don't know what it is about their country, but they did act a little bit better.
Hmm. Testing for banned and performance-enhancing substances. Did you ever get a list of substances that were prohibited or banned? What about at the games? Did they test you at the games or anybody you know at the games?
No, they tested some people I know, but they didn't test me.
Mm-hmm.
And because I wasn't going to let them test me anyway.
Oh, really?
I didn't have nothing for them to test me for.
Yeah. What were your feelings at the time? So did you know that they were doing
yeah.
testing? And how did you feel about it then?
Well, I didn't understand then, but more or less that I understand now, that why would they want to test us? And it's because of what those have been doing and haven't wasn't saying anything. But I had some feeling I was not going to let them test me.
Mm.
So, but I didn't have to worry about that, you know, too much. They tested, they might have tested us in a way, but I can't remember. I'm trying to think, did we urinate in any cups, anything? But I want to say yes, but then I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember hearing rumors about other athletes or other teams or other nations that were using performance-enhancing substances?
Oh, yeah.
What was the talk or the rumors going around back then?
Some of them... Well, see, I didn't know... Ms. Everett, I didn't know anything about drugs. I was very illiterate towards drugs. I didn't know anything about steroids. I didn't know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't understand why. What were they doing? And I couldn't tell. I thought it maybe it was... I don't know why. I just didn't know. I never was introduced to know more or less hearing about steroids. I never knew about them.
Mm.
I never knew.
Well, I guess maybe it was still fairly new back then, so maybe...
Might have been, but any other type of drugs that I knew that they were talking about, I didn't know anything about them. And, you know, because I didn't learn about drugs until I got drunk or grown.
Mm.
And I didn't know because certain pills and this and that, and because you would go to jail.
Yeah.
I might arrest you for an aspirin. So I find a way to find why you shouldn't have that aspirin. That's one thing they'll do. But no, I didn't have any experience with the drugs, didn't know. No one particularly that they tested.
Mm-hmm.
Not for sure.
Were you aware of the disqualification that happened during the 68 games? It wasn't on the U.S. team. There was a Swedish pentathlete that was disqualified. Do you remember hearing about somebody being disqualified for performance-enhancing substance or banned substance while you were there at the games? Like, was that publicized or known?
I don't think so.
Hmm. So, going back to the Black Power salute and Tommy Smith and John Carlos, did you witness the salute? Were you there?
Yes, we were there when they did that. That was one reason why we were there.
Did you know ahead of time that it was going to happen?
I knew it was going to happen, but like I said, I didn't know what it stood for. The Black Power salute, I just didn't know what it stood for. Mm-hmm. And I still don't. What is it for? I mean, what was the reason for it? You know, nobody's never told me.
Really? Mm-hmm. So Tommy Smith or Don Carlos didn't discuss it with you?
No.
And their specific reasons?
Well, maybe they felt like I was too young, because like I said, I was about the youngest out there. And, that maybe they felt that I wasn't going to participate, which I wasn't in anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have participated in that.
Mm-hmm. So describe where you were when you saw it and what your reaction was and the reaction of those around you.
Well, when they did the Black Power salute, I remember they threw their hand up and put their head down. I was looking and something happened. They either was playing the music and they stopped playing, and I think they got thrown out the country. They got escorted out of there, put on a plane a day or so later.
Mm-hmm.
After that. So, and I still didn't know nothing about it. All I knew, they had a black glove, did a Black Power salute. What it was for, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Still don't know.
Did anyone around you say anything about it, or what?
No.
What did you think about it?
No, I don't think no one ever said anything to me about it, or questioned me about it.
Are you doing okay?
I'm about to go to sleep.
Oh, no. Okay.
Let me tell you, Desiree. Do you know I got off from work this morning?
So you worked a night shift?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well.
And I drove down here.
So do you need to take a nap for a little while, or do you want to just...
No, we keep going.
Okay.
I'm going to get into bed.
Okay. So we'll wrap this up pretty quickly then. Did you witness any of the other record-setting events that were really exciting? Which ones really stick out in your mind?
The ones with track and field. The records were set in those. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the long jump with Bob Beamon.
Bob Beamon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that was the high jump, too. What was it?
Was it Fosbury?
But I know Bob Beamon, and I remember seeing him. Yeah.
And then what did you do? You already talked a little bit about what you did. You went up to Maryland, and you went to the school there. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you were done with the Olympic Games, you had to go to school and go to work?
No, I went back home, and I left shortly after that and went to Maryland.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was the reaction back home? Your community and your family and your hometown?
My dad, they all were very happy. I remember going back to my school. They were happy to see it. People were just happy to see the medal. Very happy to see that medal. And I was happy to have it, see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's when people was asking me, what was God going to do after? I didn't know. I didn't know what I was going to do. Pappy Galt got a hold to us. That's when I came to Piney Point, Maryland, and got down there with him. And then stayed there for a while.
Mm-hmm. And you said you were drafted?
Yeah, into the service. And then I was deferred because I had gotten married and had a child, the only child.
Mm.
And I got deferred after that. So I didn't know. I did not want to go at that time, so.
So you ended up not having to go to Vietnam.
Right.
That's good. So I know you went pro in about 1970.
Yeah.
And you had a good career there. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I had a lot of, matter of fact, I either tied with someone that had the first round knockouts. Me and someone tied that or something in the world boxing book. And I think the guy that I would have broke it with made sure I didn't, because I knocked him out in the second round instead of the first round.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
And when did you finally decide to leave your sport or retire and focus on something else?
It was a while after that, though, because I started getting interested in the police department.
Mm-hmm.
And I got on the police department, and I noticed things was out. My income was coming in. And at the time when I turned professional, there was a lot of athletes. Boxers wouldn't fight me. I was left-handed.
Aha, southpaw.
Yeah, and they did not want to fight left-handed. Today, they'll fight you if you triple-handed, because they have no choice. Either you fight you or they don't.
Hmm.
Or they won't get what they're going to get. That's why you find a lot of left-handers today now champions.
Hmm.
See, because they will fight you now. So, but they wouldn't fight me.
And then are you currently involved in any way in any boxing now?
I won't get into it. And matter of fact, I had a guy who wanted me to train him. I told him, I said, I don't really want to train anybody, because I want to make sure if I ever go into boxing, it's going to have to be for real.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be for real. I'm not going to get up there and train somebody. I started off with a girl one time. She was real good. And then she, for some reason, she just ventured off.
Hmm.
And now, if she had continued on the way girls are fighting now, boxing, she would have been. She wanted to fight Kaylin, I think Muhammad Ali's daughter or something. And I told her, I said, well, you can fight her. All you got to do is keep training. She was real good. And I don't ever know what happened to her. So, yeah.
That's unfortunate.
I know my wife kind of feels strange about it, but, you know, you have to put your trust somehow or another in people. And if you're married, you just have to trust. Just like I mean, I never doubt my wife on anything. And being just like you have a manager. If you don't trust your manager, you don't need him. You definitely don't need him. So that's why people have to show they're trustworthy and they're honest. And this is the way I've always been. I've always wanted to be like that.
Did you have any big role models or mentors, any big influences on your career?
Well, no more than Muhammad Ali, which I picked up a lot of his style. It more or less wasn't because I wanted to pick up on his style. His style was something I wanted to do to keep from getting hit. Moving your head, dancing around, and I found that to be a good way to box because you didn't get hit much. So,
what did he always say? Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee?
Sting like a bee, yep.
So, how do you think your life would be different if you had not been a boxer?
I don't know. I don't think it would be as it would have been, but I do know it made a difference. It made a big difference. Because when you do things that people like and would like to see you do, you have to change in a lot of ways. You know, you got to make people happy. You got to show people that you're a decent person. You got to show people that you okay. Like, what's his name? Michael Spinks. You know, he was a good guy, but yet he did some of the things. Now, all of it, I don't believe. I know about what really happened, but, you know, I still feel you don't go anywhere when anybody's not wanted. I remember when I caught myself, used to be drinking. And I would go out. I met a young lady. That's all I did was met her. I would not do anything because I always said, I don't want nobody ever blame whatever they do with me on liquor. And that's the truth. So,
do you have any advice for Olympic hopefuls? Like, what would be one piece of advice that you would give to somebody who wanted to go to the Olympics today, or become a successful boxer today?
Do what you have to do. Train hard, because it can come to you very easily if you know what to do. You got to learn, listen, and obey.
Learn, listen, obey.
That's it. Those are three things you're going to do.
And what was the impact of the games on your life? Like, how did your participation in the games change your life?
It changed me because of my, you know, my whole outlook on life. You know, here it is. I might have not won the gold medal, but I felt like I did. A lot of times people win the gold medal, get a lot of this and a lot of that. I decided to do what I wanted to do, what I had started. I remember telling a newspaper reporter back in when I was in Detroit, what did you want? I wanted to become a police officer.
And you became a police officer?
I became a police officer. I stayed on there off and on about 18, 19 years.
Oh, wow.
And then I started saying how I wanted to be able to have a good income. I didn't go to college like a lot of folks, but I had an opportunity when I was on the police department. They had free college courses we could take, but I had a family. I worked off duty, making extra money. Passed that up, but God made a way for me. I went into foster care. I have three siblings in foster care. I also work another job, and my income is way up there.
Good for you.
Way up there. And I did all these years, I never knew until about 2 weeks ago, I figured out my salary. And I couldn't believe it. And I know it's going to be hard for people, but I can show you on paper exactly what I make. And I just figured it up. And if I tell you, you'll say, oh, he's lying. But people don't know. Now, if I got a contract showing me making my salary $55,724.55. Plus, I get an additional $15,300 in room and board for my guys. Plus, I'm working this other little job at night as a site tech. I'd have made over $20,000 in that.
Wow.
Now, figure out how much I'd have made.
That's a lot.
How much you think I'd have made?
It sounds like you're doing well.
And the one with Fault Secure, it's $71,024.55. And this one, I made over $20,000. And if you put them two together, that's over $90-something thousand.
Wow. And that's a lot more than you made in professional boxing?
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Sounds like you work really hard, though.
I do. And I love to work. I get fussed at, talked about my life. I told her about a couple weeks ago, I said, I was going to change one of my off days. She said, for what? You're still going to work 7 days. So I said, oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
And then they had me off the schedule to be, this is why I called you to make this arrangement. I said, I wasn't going to. And I called her and told her, I said, thank you for putting me off this weekend. I was going to take advantage of going to Austin. Because if I hadn't, she would have put me on there. They find a way to put me back on the schedule.
Yeah. Well, you're a busy guy. Thank you so much for coming in today. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell me about your experience in the 68 games?
No, that I enjoyed it. And it's been a long lifetime remembrance. And it's just something, everyone, if you got an opportunity to do it, do it and be happy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
I took it.
Yeah, we're gonna. So she has got your parking ticket and it's validated.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about that. And so what we're gonna do is she's gonna go get your truck and pull it up so that you don't have to go up and down all those stairs to the parking garage.
Oh, that's okay. What is leg of mine?
So when did you have surgery?
In December. So, it looks like it's getting worse.
Well, it probably takes some time to...
Well, you know what it is? I think, like the doctor said, it's setting up with arthritis and all that. So, but sometimes I can walk and I walk a lot better. And sometimes I barely can make it.
Well, I guess everyone has their good days and their bad days.
Yeah.
So we'll go in here and get Cindy, and I can take that for you.
Oh.
Are you done? Do you need another one?
Oh, no.
Okay. Or if you want, you can just wait here.
Okay.
And I'll go get her, and then we'll take you down to the lobby, and we'll get your truck.
Yeah.
Did you, I know you sound really tired, but did you want to look around?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I'll be right back.
All right.